All right, so Heyman Bay is last line of the middle five line. One can see that one. And what's this, Tanya?
Heyman Bay.
Tanya, we learn in a Bryce, that other than young men, while Schneid Boram Haysen would stand for your mind, there were two things that throughout my life I was always concerned about. Of philosophy, hey, listen in the Tossie, about my davening, that it should be before my bed, we'll see in a minute, in front of my bed, we'll see in a minute what that means. Now, my Tossie should have a cinnamon sock on the jar, and about my bed itself, that it should be placed between north and south, which on the face of it means that the head and the foot of the bed should be one to the north, one to the south, respectively, although we'll see about that in a minute also. What does that mean, Altri Lossich, saying, listening to Tosti? What does that mean that he's concerned that his tefillah should be before his bed? Do you mean that literally he would make sure to daven in front of his bed? In other words, you would have the bed is usually next to the wall, and beds often are, so you don't fall out from one side at least. And besides, that way it's out of the way. It's not taking up extra room in the room. And then you say that he'd stand... One second. You're saying that he'd stand with the, he'd be standing here, the bed here, and then the wall here. So he'd be standing with the bed between him and the wall. Is that what he means? Yeah. Ah, so this question is asking Gemara's question. The question is, you're not supposed to daven in front of furniture. Well, Amar of Yehuda Amar Rab, he came to Rishon. Oh, by the Amar of Yehuda Amar Rab, didn't Rabbi Yehuda say the name of Rab? The Tamer of Yishuvim Levi, or some say of Yishuvim Levi, said, Minayim Mispalel, how do we know when a person is davening, Shaloye, Dava Chotis, Vema Levin Akir, that there shouldn't be anything blocking between him and the wall? Shanema, the Pasuk says, Vayasev Chizkiyahu Ponav Al Akir, Chizkiyahu turned his face to the wall, Vayispalel, and he davened. Now, with that said, in Shulchan Aruch, it does mention various details, in particular, for example, if you have a piece of furniture that's just, you know, placed in place over there permanently, then you are allowed to daven with it. Well, not like a wall, but then it's sort of like a wall then in that sense.
When it's fixed to the ground.
When it's fixed to the ground, or like it's always there. So that, for example, explains the tables and shul. I mean, they're not always there, but 99% of the time they're there. Also, if it's something that you have in front of you for the purpose of davening, for example, a shkender, for example, the table or the back of the bench or whatever that you put your siddur on, then that's okay, yeah. I mean, the main idea is that the point of davening in front of the wall is mainly that you don't get distracted. If you have something else between you and the wall, you're more likely to be looking at it and getting distracted. So therefore, again, it's something that you don't have a choice, because there, or you're using it itself in order to daven, like a shtender or whatever, then that's a little bit different. The going to also bring, for example, that let's say you have a shorter person standing in front of you, or the other way around, let's say you have a taller person standing in front of you, between you and the wall, it's also not a chatzitza. The point is anyway, but why is Abba Ben Yamin making a big deal that Davka, he should have his bed between him and the wall when he's davening? Especially a bed doesn't seem to be any of these things. It's not permanently in place. You move beds around. It's not something you're using for davening. That's the question. So therefore, the answer is, Loi Tema, Lifnei Mitossi. You're right. You have to fix up what Abba Ben Yamin said. He doesn't mean that I made sure to daven in front of my bed. Rather, what he means is as close as possible to my bed. So what does that mean? In time. Rashi explains, it means that I was always careful from when I got up in the morning out of bed until I davened, I wouldn't be doing work, I wouldn't be learning Torah, until I daven until I say Krishna and daven. Now, that's Rashi says that. Tosfos mentions over here that on the face of it, we have something in the next parak that implies that you're allowed to learn Torah before saying Krishna and before davening. We're doing that right now, of course. The Rosh and then Rabbeinu Yonah talk about a couple of possibilities. The Rosh says maybe this din only applies to somebody who doesn't regularly daven in shul. He davens regularly, let's say, at home. So then, in that case, there's a problem. You know, he's going to get too busy with his work or his learning or whatever, and for learning in particular, and forget about davening. But if he has a regular minyan that he goes to in shul, then the Rosh says it's not an issue. The Talmud Rabbeinu Yonah and the back of the Gemara and the Rif say a little differently, that if you're talking about if it's Talmud Torah Derabim, if you have many people learning Torah together, then that's, and they have a regular shiur before davening, then that's different. So the source of Talmud Torah Derabim is a very great one, and therefore that overrides the need to daven right away. Not greater than Tefillah Derabim, you still have to daven with a minyan, but the point is it overrides this somewhat chumitosi. It overrides this idea that you should be careful to daven as close as possible to when you get up.
Rabbi needs to be.
So Rabbim, I don't know how many Rabbim means. I mean, we need more Rabbim over here, and then, yeah. But, yeah. Okay. This is all, by the way, I mean, this is not talking about the kind of davening that you do in order to prepare for learning. I mean, you know, the Rebbeim urged us to learn Chassidus before davening, which is that itself. The difference is Chassidus before davening itself is preparation for davening. That's what we're going to learn later on in the Sefer. You have about the Chassidim or the Shonim, that they would take an hour before davening to meditate on the greatness of Hashem. Well, Gemara can be or it cannot be. It all depends what frame of mind you're getting into. But that's what it means. Given that we can't mean literally in front of his bed, then okay. Okay. So that's the one thing that Abba Ben Yamin said. He wants to make sure that his tefillah is samuch l'mitasi, and that's what we're saying. It means that as close as possible to when he gets up, he should be davening. Mao Shaw actually has a different explanation of it. He says that we're talking about before he goes to bed, he would make sure to daven that he should have good children, which therefore relates to the next thing. Okay. What does he mean when he says, I always wanted to make sure that my bed is between north and south? Why? What's so important about that? The Amr of Chama Barachanina, Amr of Yitzchak, Kol Amnosim Mitosa Ben Sofam Lajarim, anybody who puts his bed between east and west, between north and south, so he puts on the face of it, it means he puts one end of the bed facing north and the other end facing south, having laid bonim tzchorim, he will have male children. In other words, so what's so important about putting it north and south? Rashi says that maybe because the Shechina is in the east or in the west. So therefore your bed, and in particular the place where you're going to be having tashmish, the place where a man and woman are going to be having relations, shouldn't be facing with the head or the feet towards the east or the west. It wouldn't be makabedik to the Shechina. So therefore, it should be facing north or south. The Rabbeinu Yonah talks about that at all, and the Ramban also talk about that. I mean, symbolically, the north in the Mishkan is where the Shulchan was. The Gemara mentions elsewhere it represents riches. The south is the south
north
where the
is riches.
North is riches. South is Torah. That's true. Because the point is that if a person has children who continue after him, who continue his family name, continue his business, and whatever, to have male children means that he has children that are going to be associated with his family and people, you know, that his family name and whatever is going to be remembered. Okay. Shenema utzfuncha t'malei bitnam, as the pasuk says, your tzafun, they will fill up their stomach. The simple meaning of the pasuk is what Hashem has hidden away, tzafun will wasn't hidden away like an agada, tamale bitnam, you will fill up their stomach with it. But the Gemara is darshin, and your tzfuncha meloshen tzafun, that it means north. And therefore, tamale bitnam, they will have a full pregnancy without miscarrying early. Yisbu ubanim, they will be satisfied with sons. So we see there's an association between north and sons. Rav Nachman Yitzchak says also such a person who's careful with that, his wife will not miscarry. Why? Because here it says you will fill up their stomach. By Rivka it says her days were filled of her pregnancy, and she had twins in her stomach. So we see that there's an association between filling and a complete 9-month pregnancy without miscarrying early. Next, so what comes of it? You will fill up their stomach, you move on. Okay, so what does this mean? On the surface of it, tzafun means hidden. That's how Mephoshim on the plot explain it. Hidden. But the Gemara is darshaning it over here, Meloshim tzafun, Meloshim north. So therefore, if the head or the foot of the bed is towards the north, then you tamale bitnam and you spobon. And then there's oicha for those. Tzfuncha means the Gemara over here means the north. Tamale bitnam means the womb. You will fill up their womb. And then you spobon, and they will be satisfied with children. So what comes of this? So in Shulchan Aruch it brings this, that you're not supposed to have the head or the foot of the bed facing east or west. You're supposed to have them facing north or south. Primarily it says this is talking about when a person is with his wife, for the reason that Rashi had just said, because of Tashmish. With that said though, the Zohar actually says it the other way around, that the bed, that the head and the foot of the bed, Dafka should be north and south. Dafka should be east and west. So you have Mephoshim who try to reconcile. That's what the Zohar says. I don't know if it gives a reason. So I don't know if the, I don't know. So you have Mephoshim who try to reconcile that with the Gemara over here.
How about
you let me talk, and then, you know, I know, obviously, there's a contradiction. I'm trying to explain it, and you're interrupting me. You know, it makes it very difficult to carry on a shiur. No, seriously, we've had people who were here and then stopped coming because of that kind of thing. Okay. You have the first, and you try to reconcile that. You have the Mefarshim that try to reconcile that Zohar with our Gemara. Because after all, the expression in the Gemara here is Shekhein Sunna Ben Sofim Majorim, that the bed should be placed between north and south. And that can be understood, that what it means is the sides of the bed should face north and south, so between north and south in a certain sense, and the heads face east and west, respectively. With that said, though, most Mefarshim and most Poskim don't accept that. They say there is, after all, a contradiction. So therefore, in Shulchan Aruch it says, ideally you should have your bed with one end pointing north and one end pointing south. If, for whatever reason, you can't do that, your house, for example, is not laid out in such a way that makes that possible, then fine, go ahead and do it east and west, so that works according to the Zohar. So the Zohar says that you should do it east and west. So when we have a contradiction between the Gemara and the Zohar, there's a famous thing that the Alter Rebbe writes in Shulchan Aruch, that when you have a contradiction between the Gemara and the Zohar, then you go according to the Gemara. Although they say that later on, ask the Alter Rebbe, what about, doesn't it say, you should go according to the Zohar? And he says, yes, according to Nigla, you should go according to the Gemara. According to Kabbalah, you should go according to the Zohar. Whatever the case, the point is that when you're able to follow the Gemara, then you do that. And you say, okay, maybe we don't clearly know what the Zohar means. But when you don't have a choice, then you're able to follow the Zohar. Primarily, that's what we're saying. That's what we're talking about, Tashmish. The Pnei Yeshua says one more answer. He says that so you have to ask anyway, why is Abba Ben Yamin so concerned about this? You put the bed one time, and that's that. So he says, because also what it means is maybe it has to be exactly north and south, or exactly east and west, as the case may be, not even a degree off, and that's very hard to get right. Tanya, we learn in a Braisa, another thing, Abba Ben Yamin, Shnayim Shenichnasu Leispalo, if two people come in to place the daven, the Kodim Echad Mehen Leispalo, one of them finishes davening first, the Loi Himten is Kaveir, and he doesn't wait for the other one to finish so that they can leave together, Tofin Lo Tfilos Ibafana, they throw his tefillah into his face. In other words, Hashem rejects that first person's tefillah. Shenema, as the passage says, Torah Napshe Ba'apoi, the one who rips up or throws his nefesh in his face. Nefesh is a reference to davening. As Ba'eshbek is Napshe Lifnashem, I poured out my nefesh in front of Hashem. Halaman Chate Oziv Oret, do you think because of you the earth is going to be abandoned? Do you think that because you left, therefore the Shekhinah is going to leave your friend? No, the Shekhinah would like to stay with him, and you're so to speak, forcing it to leave. There's various other ways of explaining it. For example, one of them is that it's a statement of fact. Halaman Chatel Zivaret. Yes, as a matter of fact, because of you, the Shekhinah is leaving, because there's more Shekhinah, as I was going to say later, when there are two people than when there are one. So like this, you leaving is causing the Shekhinah to leave. Also, there's are we talking about always? Are we talking about, not just that, but such a person causes the Shekhinah to leave the Jewish people as a whole. Shenema, because the end of that same pasuk in Iyov continues, the yekach tsur mimakoymai, the tsur moves away from its place. What is tsur? The ain't tsur ala kodesh baruch hu. Shenema, tsur yolod chateshi. As the pasuk says, the tsur that gave birth to you, you forgot. If it has, it's referring to that how the Jewish people abandoned and forgot Hashem. So we see that the word tsur refers to Hashem. So that's what it is. So he causes the Shekhinah to leave the Jewish people, such a person. On the other hand, if he does wait for the other person, what reward does he get min hashemayim for it? He is zoicha to the following brachas that you find in Pesukim in Yeshaya. If you would have only listened to my mitzvahs, and Rashi explains that hikshavta also means waiting. So if you would wait for my mitzvahs, then the pasuk says a whole bunch of brachas. Your peace would flow constantly like a river. Your righteousness would be like the waves of the sea that come one after the other. Your children would be as many as the sand. And those who come out of your womb, etc. So we see that there would be great brachas for a person who waits for somebody else. Now, we're talking about where he doesn't leave one person alone behind in Shul. Now, Tosfos brings over here from Rabbeinu Tam that this is talking about in those days, we know all over Shas, that shuls were out in the fields. So in particular at night, Rabbeinu Hananel says something similar. So therefore, when you have a shul that's out in the fields, far away from the city, and it's at night, then you should be waiting for the other person so he doesn't have to walk home all alone from the fields at night. But during the day, or if the shul is in town, there's less of an issue. Other Rishonim say that even if it is in town, just the fact that it's at night is not quite so safe. Tosfos brings that the Ri would, if he, when there were people in Shul, and if they were going to be left behind, then he would daven extra long. The Ri is one of the Balei Tosfos. He has his time that has to be spent learning. The Rebbe Yitzchak, his name was. So he would extend his davening so that people would leave, so he doesn't have to leave them behind. If meanwhile somebody else would come to shul, then Ri would pick up a sefer and start learning until they finished. It's a chumrah. Tosfos says, okay, we're good for us to be machmir, but that's not required of the halacha. If somebody comes late, then the post can say, the fact of the matter is he's showing he doesn't care to be left behind, because why would he, other than the fact that he came late? So therefore you're not required of Yalacha to wait for him, like in this case, but nevertheless, it's still Midas Chassidus to do like the Ri. I mean, if the Ri, whose time is valuable, could do it, then so could we. Okay, Marsha anyway explains the thing from the Pasuk, Lo Ikshavta, the Mitzvot, say a little bit differently. Marsha says that Ikshavta does not mean waiting, like Rashi says. So he says that it means that Mitzvot sign two mitzvahs. You have the mitzvah of Avat Yisrael, that you're not making the other person wait, and of davening, so therefore, okay. Okay, another thing, yeah, Tanya Abba Ben Yamin, another thing that Abba Ben Yamin says, if the eye were to be given permission to see all the shadim, all the mazikim that surround the person, no person would be able to withstand the mazikim because they would be so terrified. I once saw, by the way, somebody wanted to say that maybe the Gemara over here by mazikim is hinting at bacteria and things like that. If you could see all the ones that are in the area and in the air around you, yeah. The Me'iri actually has a different explanation. The Me'iri in general is one of the Rishonim, the Rambam is another one, who's not really keen on the idea of shading and whatever. So he explains that Mazikim over here, and also earlier in the Gemara when we talked about Mazikim that are removed from a person by Krishna, he explains that it means machshavas that are dangerous to a person's relationship with Hashem. So if a person were to see how many of them there are out there, then he wouldn't be able to. Abaya says, let me tell you how many there are. Inu nefishi minan, in fact, the shadim, the mazikim, whatever, outnumber us. The kainyalon ki kiflo la'ugya. They surround us like you're digging around an ugya. Rashi describes the ugya is you have a round patch of land under a grapevine, for example, so that water will collect there and then water the grapevine. So the kisla is the ditch around it. So you have there's a ditch around, then you have in the middle of the ugya, and the grapevine sits in the middle of the ugya.
That's usually the case
because that way you have a water. That way you have water collecting in that ditch. That way water collects in that ditch from rain and from irrigating the field or whatever. And that way the grapevine's roots are able to get up the water. So the point is, in other words, that the same way as that surrounds a grapevine, the same way the mazikim are surrounding us. Every one of us human beings has 1,000 mazikim to his left side and 10,000 to his right side. Why Mu'an is right. So first of all, there's a pasuk that brings over here on the side, Yifal Mitzitcha Elef or Vava Meminecha. We say it in Shabbos morning davening. There should fall 1,000 from your left side and 10,000 from your right side. But I saw an explanation that it has to do with Mitzvah Saseh and Mitzvah Lo Saseh, basically. Mazikim, one thing is, Mazikim come about by a person not doing mitzvahs properly, or a person does them without proper kavanah. So here the idea is, in other words, that let's say there's more on the right side, in the sense there's more of a chance for a person to mess up with the right side, which is mitzvah saseh, by not doing them at all, or B, doing them but without the proper kavana, versus on the left, which is the mitzvah lo saseh, there's really only one way to mess up, violating the mitzvah saseh. So therefore you have it. Okay. Omer Rava, so Rava says in this connection, Hai duchka d'havi b'kala. This that you have during the Kala, which is when people come, Rashi explains, on Shabbos, they come to hear a drosha in Shul, a drosha in Halacha or whatever, and you a lot of times, if you have, there's more of a crowd and there's more pushing and shoving than you would expect from the size of the crowd. Minayu Havi, so Rava said that actually comes from the Mazikim, because Mazikim also come, because after all, Mazikim get their power from anything in Sitra, or get their power from Kedusha. Nowadays, there's no shade if it's true. Well, nowadays, you also don't necessarily feel as much pushing and shoving, but I'm not. But also, again, you know, given what the Me'iri is saying, especially about mazikim, meaning bad machshavas that interfere with a person's relationship with Hashem, that, unfortunately, we still have now. And the point is, especially, now, we learned before that a person learns Torah, mazikim, stay away from him, but that's when a person learns Torah, l'shem shemayim. Not everybody is always learning Torah, l'shem shemayim, and therefore, there's room, as it talks about all over the place in Siddur, for mazikim, klippus, and whatever to parasitize it and take on and then take away some of the energy of it and use it to feed themselves. So that's symbolically what they don't exist. Maybe they don't exist. Maybe they don't exist in human areas. I don't know. Maybe they are. Maybe they're not. But Rav is saying the fact is, unfortunately, when you have people come to the Kala, when you have people come to the Shir, not all of them are coming to Shem Shemayim, and you feel. Some of them may be coming because they're curious. Some of them because they're more interested in the material. Some of them may not be intending to put what they learned into practice, et cetera, et cetera. So therefore, you have room. There's room for mazikim to at least try. And also, I should say, not necessarily are they successful. You know, just because mazikim come and try to parasitize kedusha doesn't always mean they're going to be successful. But Rava is saying, like, be on the lookout. Be aware that such things exist, and therefore look out for it. Also, hani birki deshali. When a person's knees are tired, like again, you know, they walked, but they didn't walk so much that their feet should be so tired that their knees are so tired. Also, minai, who it comes because of the mazikim, because so to speak, like you have to, as you're walking, like you have to push mazikim aside in order to walk. So it's like more, you have to spend more energy on walking than you otherwise would. Hani mani drabanan. The fact that the Talmid Chachamim's clothes wear out so quickly, where after all, Rashi says they're not doing hard physical labor, why are their clothes wearing out so fast? Also, Mechuf Yedidhu, that comes from the Mazikim rubbing up against them. Hani Mani Dirabonan, these clothes of the Rabbanan, Debolu, which wear out, Mechuf Yedidhu, that comes as a result of the Mazikim rubbing up against them. Hani Kari Deminkathon, also when a person's feet get injured as he's walking, minayu, it comes from the mazikim. So one idea of it, one of the Choroshim, the Ion Yaakov, says, therefore, what the Gemara is saying is practical advice. If a person sees that these kinds of things are happening to him unexpectedly, he should realize there are mazikim around and about. He should say, for example, Kapitel Tzadik Aleph, which had that process that we quoted before, Yipo Mitzitcha Elef or Rogam Yinyacha, in order to be protected from them. He should realize, in other words, mazikim are currently on the prowl. That's why I'm seeing these things or feeling these things. Therefore, I know there are mazikim around. Therefore, let me daven Tashem, Yosha V'Seit Elyon, to save me from them. But also symbolically, many of the Mephoshim talk about different ideas of it. Like I was saying, you know, there's the idea that mazikim represent forces of tumah that are in the world. So they try to interfere with a person's walking and avodas Hashem. They try to make them tired. They try to make them hurt. They try to wear out his clothes, which also represents the people who support the Talmid Chachamim. And then therefore, you have to be on the lookout for that and be aware if you're feeling unusually, you're sitting and learning, for example, and you're feeling unusually tired, be aware that it's a fasa yeta, be aware that the Yeta Hara and his minions are getting involved over there, and know to oppose it. Suppose a person wants to know what the shade is. Suppose a person wants to know if there are, in fact, shadim around. Laisi kitma nehila. Then what he should do is take fine ashes. Nehila means sifted. So like they're just sifted very finely. So like they're tiny particles. But nehader apuriyeh. Spread that around his bed. Over tzafra, and in the morning, chazi kikari tanagola. In the morning, he'll see tracks like chicken feet around them. Those represent the feet of the shadim. The Gemara mentions, for example, the story of Ashmedai and Gittin, that the shadim have chicken-like feet. So therefore, he's going to see chicken tracks around there, and that'll tell him, yes, indeed, there are mazikin, there are shadim. Haiman de boil mechazinu, if a person wants to actually see the mazikin, he should take the amniotic sac that the baby grows inside in the womb, the shunauta of a cat, shunauta means a female cat, uchamta bas uchamta, this cat should be a black cat and its mother was a black cat, buchauta bas buchauta, the cat itself has to be a firstborn, its mother also has to be a firstborn. Not necessarily. Maybe. Velikalya benura, burn that shulya with fire. Velishchake, then grind it up, the ashes. Velimle enemine, put some of it into his eyes. The Rashi, limle enemine, the room is fill up his eyes. Rashi explains, so you put a tiny amount of something in your eye and it fills it up. So, okay, so he put some of it in his eyes. Vachazi lahu, and then he will be able to see these mazikim that are surrounding him. One second. Now, after a person has done that, he should take the remaining ashes, put them into an iron tube, and seal it using an iron seal to make sure that the shadim can't get to it afterwards, because the shadim might steal it from him. They might steal what's left of it from him. And the rule is, Rashi brings from a Gemara and Holden, that anything that's sealed up and tied up and whatever, the mazikim have no power. Puma means the mouth of it. The lechta pume, and then he should seal up the cover, the entrance, the opening of the tube, ki hechidele lissak, in order that he doesn't get harmed by the shadim in the future. So the Gemara tells an example, Rabibi Barabaya, actually the Shalot says that the proper way of pronouncing the name should be Bevai, which is a name of, which is a name that you find in Ezra, or whatever, Rabibi or Rabibi. Bez Yud. So I don't know if this is the son of Abaya, the famous Abaya, as in Abaya and Rava. I think it is, but I'm not sure. Anyway, whatever it is, he may have had, I don't know. Anyway, so everybody always says Rabbi Barabaya, the Shalot says it's really Rabbi. Anyway, Ovad Hochi, he once tried this method, Chaza, and sure enough, he saw all the shade in the Itzak, and he was harmed by them. Because we said before that if a person could see all the mazikim, they wouldn't be able to withstand it. In particular, actually, also one of the Mephoshim says that the idea is the other way around. The cause is the other way around. The mazikim dafka don't want to be seen. So if a person makes efforts to see them, then they're more jealous of him and then they harm him. So he was harmed. Boi Rabbanan Rachmi, Aleh Rabbanan, the other Chachamim, asked for Rachmanas from him, from Hashem, the Itzi, and he was healed. But in other words, the point is it's a dangerous thing. Don't try this at home, as they say. Deeper ideas behind this. First of all, there's an idea that a couple of Mephoshim bring, that something brought from Vilna Gaon on this, for example, that cats represent koichos of evil, and therefore the Gemara is associating, like you take the placenta of a cat and you use that in order to be able to see shape. This is true. It's not going to the bathroom, it's giving birth, but yeah, that's true. That's true. Because you have, first of all, they're non-kosher animals, so that itself, but also they prowl around at night, and they whatever. On the other hand, Sefer Pesher Agadza that I've mentioned before has an interesting take on it. He says that a cat represents a person being angry at the evil that's in the world and trying to destroy it. He has a whole explanation of it based on Parashita and other sources that mice represent evil and Gaiva and whatever, and a cat, which always is after mice, even when it's not hungry, represents a person who represents this symbolically, a person who's angry that there's evil in the world and is trying to destroy it. So therefore, what we're saying over here, if a person wants that, no, that's on the contrary. It's a good thing. So the point is, he's saying, therefore, so he explains that Gemara means symbolically. If a person wants to know what mazikim are out there that he needs to know to stay away from, then he can find that out by considering the cat and considering how it goes about destroying the evil that it finds. You burn that with the fire of Torah, and then he puts some of it in his eyes, and then he'll realize what dangers lurk out there for him to be aware of, to stay away from. But then once he did that, then he says, then make sure to hide away the rest. Once you've finished looking into evil and understanding it in order to stay away from it, don't keep on obsessing over it. Maybe, but according to Gemara over here, yeah, the baby rabbi was saying was able to, but... How did Shlomo? So, okay, I guess Shlomo didn't need this whole method. I guess he was on a higher level. He ruled over the shadim. Well, he saw Ashmedai, for example, yeah?
Ashmedai
is one of the shadim. He's the king of the shadim. Okay.
Isn't there a way with Torah that allows you to see the mazikim?
What we just said. But, which is this whole thing with the cats, placenta, and whatever.
But that's true.
Right. We do find other places where the Chachamim saw mazikim. So okay, yeah, maybe it depends. I don't know, Dafka through Torah specifically, but yeah, you have sometimes. I mean, we learned earlier that a person could be harmed by mazikim when they go into a rune or whatever. Yeah. Okay.
So can't you say that this whole thing, the shiga, is like magic?
Well, it's not magic because not using magic would be the kind of magic that the Torah asks is where you're calling on evil forces in the world to help you do such and such. Here, you're following something which the Chachamim. Okay, you're just trying to look at evil forces, but you're following a recipe that the Chachamim told us. That's not magic. Okay. Anyway, the point is, so again, the Pesher got to explain symbolically that we're talking about, that a person should realize how he, on the one hand, you do have to fight against the evil in the world. On the other hand, don't be obsessive over it. Once you're done, hide it away, and then don't deal with it anymore.
So
according to him, a Catholic is a good thing. Tanya, Abba ben Yamanan, or another thing Abba ben Yamanan says, Ein tefillah shel adam nishmas el bevet haknesses. A person's tefillah is listened to only in shul. Or Gilui Nashas over here, Rabbi Akiva Eger on the side, brings from elsewhere, where Tosfos Gira says, Ima Tzibur, with the Tzibur. Shenema Lishmoya El Arina Ve'El HaTfila, as the Pesuk says, Shloima Ask Hashem, to listen to the Rina and the Tfila. Rina means praise, Tfila means davening. The Mekoyim Rina, in the same place where there is Rina, in the shul, where the people sing and praise Hashem with beautiful voices, Shom Tehei Tfila, that's the appropriate place where Tfila should be. Amar Ravin, Amar Rav Ada, Amar Rav Minayin Shakarish Baruch Hu Motzi Beveis HaKnesses. So in Shulchan Aruch it brings this. A person should ideally daven in a shul, and actually what it means is even if there's no minyan there, still other things being equal, a person. Well, that, nevertheless, but the fact is there's Rina there other times. So the point is, even for example, you have, let's say, a person missed the minyan, so you might think, okay, then I might as well daven at home. All Gemara is saying, nevertheless, there's an advantage to davening in a shul even if there's no minyan there. Obviously, if there's a minion, then that's obviously, yeah, because Mokim Rina, obviously, if there's a minion, even an ad hoc minion, then that takes precedence. Okay. Omer Rovin, Omer of Ada, Omer of Yitzchak, Minayin Chakarish Baruch Hu Motzi Beveis HaKnesses. From where do we know that Hashem is regularly found in Shul? Shinema, Elikim Nitzavada Skel. The prophet says Hashem stands in the congregation of Hashem. Tzavada Skel. Rashi says, Beveis Moyet Shaloi, in the place that's appointed to Davin Hashem. Also, how do we know that if 10 people are davening together, the Shechina is with them? Shenema, same possible. And the word Eda means 10 people. We said we're going to learn later on in the third parak that we learn from the Meraglim, actually. There were 12 Meraglim. Two of them were good, Yeshua and Tolik. 10 of them were bad. And the Pasuk calls them Eda Hara'a Hazel. So only 10. Mind you, by the way, the Rebbeim talk about the idea. So why are the things that we're learning that a minion, we learn from such a Rishoyim, the Meraglim, and the answer is based on what the Alter Rebbe writes in the Geras HaKodesh, that when you have 10 Jews, here all Gemara is talking about when 10 Jews are davening together. In Pirkei Avos, you have a similar thing when 10 Jews are learning together. But the Alter Rebbe explains, even when you have just 10 Jews together, just the fact that there are 10 Nefesh HaLekisses there is a very powerful thing and brings down the Shechina. So to the point where it says that either the Alter Rebbe brings from the Mezuzah Magid, the Mezuzah Rebbe, that even a Malach were to be there, he would be completely bottled from the outpouring of Alakos that's there. So therefore, we learn even the Meraglim, they were Rishayim, but nevertheless, each of them still had a Nefesh Elokis, and 10 of them together makes a very powerful thing.
Not Rishayim, they couldn't see the great...
No, they said Lashon Hara about Eretz Yisrael. No, they were Rishayim, and it started out good, but whatever. These were great people originally, but then they went bad. Whatever, unfortunately, good people can go bad. Anyway. Okay, so we see that an Eda is called 10 people, even if it's 10 people that are no good, nevertheless, they still each have a Nefesh Elokis, and they bring down a powerful revelation of Elokus today. Okay.
You're talking about Frum people?
But that's just Jews in general. Well, who says Frum? So every Jew, Frum or not, has a Nefesh Elokis. How do we know also if you have three people sitting and judging a din Torah, where you need a basin of three, how do you know also the Shechina is with them? That same positive, continues, among Elohim he judges. Elohim means a basin of at least three. Elohim means Hashem, but sometimes it also means Dayanim. How do we know then that even if only two people are sitting and learning Torah together, the Shechina is with them? The pasuk says, then those who fear Hashem spoke one to the other. Hashem listened. Or actually, so here Rashi explains, Vayakshev, like at the top of the Amud, where Rashi explains, means to wait. So here also it means Hashem, so to speak, waits for them. Hashem is waiting on them to listen to what they're saying. Okay. So therefore, so we see that the Shechina is there with two people as well. So the question is, so the Gemara asks, by the way, my ulachoshvei shmoi, the end of that pasuk says that Hashem listens or waits there or whatever, and he writes it down on the Sefer Zikaron, l'yirei Hashem ulachoshvei shmoi, for those who fear Hashem and for those who think about his name. Now the pasuk started out by mentioning yirei Hashem, so why is it adding, what's it adding by ulachoshvei shmoi, those who think about Hashem's name? Omer of Ashi, it means chosh of Adam lafis mitzvah. If a person was thinking to do a mitzvah, the nanas, and then there was an onus, there was an unavoidable reason, v'loyasah, that he wasn't able to do it, mala olav akosav kilasah, then the Torah counts it as if he actually did it. Because Hashem knows that a yid wants to do good, and therefore he meant to do it. There was just unavoidable circumstances that prevented him, and therefore Hashem counts it as if he did it. That's the l'chosh v'shma. Even if he didn't actually do it in practice. Now, how do we know, continues the Braisa, that, or Rovin Barav Ad, actually it's a member, it's not a Braisa, whatever. How do we know that even one person is sitting and learning Torah, that the Shechina is with him? In any place where I mention my name, meaning where I cause my name to be mentioned, that my name, Rashi says, is mentioned in connection with my mitzvahs and my words, I will come to you, says Hashem, and Elecha is singular, so it means one person, Uveirach Ticha, and I will give you a bracha. So we see that even one person is learning Torah is enough to bring Hashem.
Azkir Shmi is the best Torah.
Azkir Shmi, Rashi says, Hashem Yizokher Shmi, that my name is mentioned in connection with my mitzvahs and my words. The Torah, which is learning Torah. And in Chassidus, it talks about the idea that we use the expression kodei batorah. We're going to have the beginning of the next parak, for example. Hoya kodei batorah. The word kodei means to read. It also means to call. So when a person learns Torah, they're calling Hashem. And Hashem reciprocates. Okay.
Where do you get that?
It's in Chassidus in a number of places. Okay. Kodei Hashem before kodei. Hashem is close to all those who call him, to all those who call him in truth. In particular, truth refers to the Torah. So it means when a person calls Hashem through the Torah, then Hashem, so to speak, reciprocates and calls back to him.
Is Chumash Haifa also relevant to that?
Maybe. I don't know. Okay. All right. So the question is like this. We said that if one person is learning Torah, the Shechina is with him. We said two people, three people, 10 people. So what is being added? If we're saying that Hashem is there when even only one person is learning Torah, does it need to be said two? Why do we need to say two, and why do we need an apostle for two? That they were speaking, Isha Re'ehu, one to the other. The answer is because two have an advantage. The pasuk mentions over there in that the whole pasuk goes Oz Nibiriyir Hashem Ishareu VaYakshev Hashem Yishma Hashem waited there and listened VaYikosiv Sefer Zikaron Lefanav, and a book of remembrance was written before Hashem LeYirei Hashem Alachosh VeYishma, for those who fear Hashem and for those who think of His name. So when it comes to two people, you have the Sefer Azichron comes into play. When two people are learning Torah together, then it's written down in the Sefer HaZichronos. It's written down in Hashem's Book of Remembrance, meaning Tosfos says together with the other people. Every person has their own individual book up in Shemayim. So that, even if a person is learning by himself, then that gets written down. But to have it written in the public Sefer HaZichronos, so to speak, that's only when you have two. Now, well, Hashem writes down Rosh Hashanah what's going to happen for the person for the next year, but all year long, so to speak, Hashem is writing down what the person does, so that on Rosh Hashanah he has what to refer to. Seals the verdict, the decision, what's going to be for the year. The actual writing of what a person's doing is being written down. The Gemara, in fact, mentions in Rosh Hashanah that a person is being judged by Hashem every day, even every moment. But on Rosh Hashanah, it's written down what's going to be, what the person's fate is going to be for the coming year. And on Yom Kippur, it's sealed.
Rosh Hashanah is
not falsified. Sure it is. No, it's Yom Adin. It's also called. It's also called Yom HaZikaron. And we do talk about, in the Unasana Kotos, for example, we talk about that it's written down. Yeah. But here we're talking about that it's written down in the public Sefer HaZichronos as opposed to Chad, one person, Loi Michtiv and Mila, the Sefer HaZichronos. Sure, he has a course learning Torah, and sure, he's calling to Hashem, and Hashem is there, etc., but it's not being written down in the Sefer HaZichronos. Marshav gives a reason for it, because when two people are learning together, then if one of them makes a mistake, the other one will correct him. So they come out to something that's true, and something that's true deserves to be written in Hashem's Sefer. As opposed to one person is learning by himself, he's very likely to be misunderstanding it. So you can't call it the kind of truth that Hashem would write Sefer HaZechar. It can happen, but at least there's a better chance. They'll come to the truth. Yeah. Okay. So the question is, okay, but if you're saying the Shekhinah is there when you only have two people, plus in the boy, does it need to be said when there are three? So why do we need to mention that when there are three, the Kerev Elokim Yishpot? The answer is, because with one person and two people, we were talking about learning Torah. With three people, we're talking about doing a Din Torah. So you would think a Din Torah is basically it's making peace between one person and another, so therefore it's not really learning Torah, but like after Shekhinah, so you could argue maybe the Shekhinah doesn't come for that. Therefore, the Gemara wants to tell us that no, judging a din torah, you have two people are arguing. This cow belongs to me. Nevertheless, you should realize it's part of Torah. It's still an essential part of Torah. If we said that the Shekhinah is there by three people, Asorah Meboya, do we need to say if there are 10 people? The answer is because the 10 people is an advantage. Asorah Kodma Shekhinah Va'Asya. When you have 10 people that are learning together, that are davening together, actually, we said, then the Shekhinah comes before they come. And the Shekhinah, so to speak, is waiting for them. Plosa Adiyasu. But when you have three people, only when they sit down and start the Din Torah, then Hashem's Shekhinah joins them. So each one has an advantage over the previous one. Okay. Omer of Oben, Omer of Ada, Omer of Yitzchak. Famous thing, Minayin Shakadosh Baruch Hu Maniach Tefillin. How do we know that Hashem puts on Tefillin? Now, what does that mean that Hashem puts on Tefillin? So, of course, you have everybody from the Geonim and the Rishonim and the Achronim and Chassidus has huge amounts to talk about this. Starting with the Rash Bagwims, Rav Hai Goin says what it means is that we know that Hashem, for example, showed Moshe an image of the Mishkan, Hashem in Mara Oz Chabohar, that I showed you on the mountain, so that Moshe could duplicate it. So the same way, so to speak, Hashem put on tefillin to Moshe, in other words, he showed him something representing a person putting on tefillin so that Moshe should understand how tefillin are supposed to be worn. The Rashba says, I don't like that, really, because the Gemara is going to soon ask about the details of Hashem's tefillin. If it's just we're talking about that Hashem showed him the image of the outer tefillin, then what do we need to know, the details, what's written in them? So the Rashba has a whole long explanation, partly Alpi Kabbalah, that what it means is that tefillin represent our bond and our connection with Hashem, and so to speak, how we pride ourselves on our connection with Hashem, and therefore, so to speak, Hashem putting on tefillin represents the reciprocal of it, that Hashem, so to speak, prides himself and on that he has us as his nation and wants to be close with us, and that kind of thing is represented by strapping on tefillin on his arm and his head, for the awful. There's a lot more about it, and a Siddur that talks about extensively the idea. We know in the Bar Mitzvah Maimer, it talks about that when say Hashem puts on tefillin, it represents the idea of bringing down Moichin into Midos, so wherever the idea of bringing down Hashem's intellectual spirits of Chokhmah bin Adat into the Midos, which were used to create the world, which means, in other words, that the world itself is being elevated to a higher level. There are other places in Chassidus where it talks about that it's the idea of bringing down Ur Ein Sof, the infinite light of Hashem, into the Moichin themselves.
All these things that Tefillin do?
All these things are accomplished by Tefillin. In the Siddurim Dach, for example, there's a long section called Shara Tefillin, which deals with in detail, based on our Gemara, based on Azoya, based on other things, what exactly is accomplished when we put on Tefillin, and what exactly is accomplished up above when Hashem reciprocally, so to speak, puts on Tefillin. It means the idea of drawing down Moshe into Midas. It means that Hashem's Moshe are more revealed in the world, therefore. It means that the Ore and Sof, Hashem's infinite light, is being more revealed to lower levels. This is Hashem's tefillin. This is Hashem's tefillin, but that's evoked by our tefillin. In the Siddur of Dach, it also talks about the idea that for the tefillin are compared, and in many Maimorim, it talks about the tefillin are compared to a signet ring. Simeni hachosam al-libecha, placing like a signet ring on, like a signet on your heart, we say in Shir HaShirim. So it represents the idea, like you have a signet ring, which has, let's say, the image on it is sticking out of the ring. When you press it into wax or clay or what have you, then you get an indented image, and vice versa. If you have an indented image on the ring, then it creates a convex image, a relief image. So therefore, so it talks about the idea that our tefillin and Hashem's tefillin are, so to speak, like that. You have like the our mitzvahs evoke an equal and corresponding reaction, Mamaila. So, yeah. So, okay. So how do we know that Hashem puts on tefillin? Shenema nishba Hashem b'yeminoi u'b'zroya uzoi. The pasuk says Hashem has sworn by his right hand and by the arm of his power. So what does that mean? B'yeminoi zu Torah. The word b'yeminoi refers to Torah. Shenema b'yeminoi esh dachwame. From Hashem's right hand, he gave us the Torah. U'b'zroya uzoi. When it says that Hashem's powerful arm, elu tefillin. This refers to tefillin, which go on the arm. Shenema Hashem oiz la'ama yitin. As it says, Hashem will give strength to his people. And how do we know that the tefillin themselves are called strength? I mean, nine shat tefillin oiz heim l'Yisrael. How do we know that tefillin give the Jewish people strength? Dichtiv, b'ro kol amei ha'aretz kishem Hashem nikra alecha. All the nations of the world will see that the name of Hashem is called on you. V'yoru mineka, and they will be afraid of you. V'tanya, Rabbi Eliezer, agadol oimer, and we learn in a braisa, Rabbi Eliezer, agadol says, elu tefillin shebarosh, that refers to the tefillin on the head. Those are seen in particular, because Tosfos says, first of all, that has most of Hashem's name on it. The Shorosh has the Shin on the sides and the Dalet in the knot, whereas the Shoyad only has the one letter Yud. Okay, Tosfos says another reason is because the Tefillin Shorosh are high up on the head. They can be seen. The Tefillin Shoyad are covered by sleeve or whatever, so therefore they're not as visible. So if you're saying that the Goyim are going to see the Tefillin, then it has to refer to the Tefillin Shorosh. It does. Well, that's when you wrap the straps. So I'm in it because we wrap them in such a way that you wind up with a backward dalad. Right. But you have permanently in the tefillin, you have the shins on the sides, the dalad in the knot on the back of the tefillin shorosh, and the yud on the tefillin shorosh. Those are the things of Hashem's name that are permanently in the tefillin. Yeah, when we put them on as well, we also evoke a name, shin, dalad, yud, by the way we wrap them. But that's temporary. Anyway, the point is that the tefillin shorosh... Because you have a shin on the upper arm and a backward dalad on the hand and a yod with the wrappings on the finger.
Backward dalad on
the hand? Yeah. When you put on tefillin this morning, you'll notice it. Okay. Anyway, there's an explanation from the Alter Rebbe that tefillin shebarosh means not just the tefillin that a person wears on the outside of their head, but when the tefillin are internalized in the head, when a person has in their head internalized as part of their as part of themselves what the tefillin represents, then it makes it that the goyim are afraid of us. But even on the external level, we know that before the Six-Day War, the Rebbe started pushing the tefillin based on this. So when the goyim see that we're wearing tefillin, then they'll be afraid of us. Okay. What exactly does it say in the tefillin of Hashem? Amale says that the pasuk umikam chayistro goyach ha'baris. The pasuk that says, yes, who is like your nation, Yisrael? One nation, one unique nation in the world. So the question is, where do we find that Hashem is proud of and praises himself that he has such a great nation? We do that. We say about Hashem, but where do we find that Hashem does the same thing reciprocally? The answer is, ain't. Indeed, we do. It says, you have he'emarta Hashem today, and Hashem has he'emircha you today. Rashi explains over here that he'emarta means to make something important. Praise something. So we see the pasuk is saying, you have praised Hashem this day, and Hashem has praised you. Rashi on the pasuk explains it a little bit differently, that he mircha means to distinguish something. And the Gemara is going to bring that point soon. Okay. Amu lehem HaKadosh Baruch Hu Yisrael, atem asisuni chativa achas ba'olam. It means Hashem is saying to the Jewish people, you have made me a unique chativa in the world. Chativa, it brings over here on the side, like something unique, something distinguished, something that there's nothing like it in the world. We say that there's nothing else like Hashem in the world. We declare that. So Hashem says, reciprocally, I will make you a unique something in the world, that you are something unique, that like there's nothing else like it. You made me a chativa achas ba'olam, shenem Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad. We declare that by saying that Hashem is one, meaning that, and as we learn in Chassidus, that it also means there's nothing else, there's no other Messias besides Hashem. I will make you a unique chativa in the world. There's a reciprocity between those themselves. In fact, in the Bar Mitzvah Maimer, it talks about that goyach ha'ba'aretz means that we are the nation that reveals the echad, the oneness of Hashem in the world, in the aretz. Chativa means a unique, distinguished unit, like so something there's nothing else like it. Omelet of Achabred Rav 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 Ashi, sort of Achabred Rav Ashi, Tenach B'chad Beis. us. Okay, that takes care of one bias. We know the tefillin of four bakim. Each one has a different parasha in them. We have Kaddish v'hayukiviyach ha-shman v'hayum shemaya. So you're saying, when we come to Yisrael goyach ha-barif, that goes in one bias of Hashem's tefillin. V'shad basimai. What about in the other bakim of Hashem's tefillin? What's in there? Omalei. So he says, you have other psukim. Ki mi goy gadol or mi goy gadol. You have two psukim back-to-back in Parshas Vayeshanan. Who is a great nation like that has Hashem so close to him? And who is a great, and who else is a great nation that has such rights, such a righteous Torah? So that's another thing. Ashrecha Yisrael. You have a pasuk that says in Parshas Vayeshanan Abracha, Moshe's last words to the Jewish people, happy are you, Yisrael. And you have another pasuk from Parshas Vayeshanan. Oy hanisa elikim. Did any other god or any other power ever try to take out a nation for himself like Hashem took you out of Mitzrayim? And ulasitcha elyon. And one more pasuk that Hashem says, that the pasuk says in Parshas Kisavai, in order to make you higher than all the other nations. So the question is, now you have too many. Yihokin official Urutova Bati. Then you have too many psukim. Now you're up to five, and you only supposed to have four Bati. So you're up to six, rather. Ella, no, like this. What it means is like this. Ki mi goy gadol or mi goy gadol, the damya mahadadi. The two psukim, ki mi goy gadol or mi goy gadol, which are similar. They both talk about the greatness of the Jewish people. And in fact, they're back-to-back in Parshas Vayeshanan. Those are one parsha. V'chad besa. Those go in one bias of Hashem's tefillin. Ashrecha Yisrael, Umikam Cha Yisrael. The next two psukim that we quoted, the two psukim that we quoted, Ashrecha and Umikam Cha, and the original pasuk that we quoted, Umikam Cha, those are also on the same topic. Therefore, B'chad Beisa. Therefore, those go in one bias of Hashem Tzvulim. Oy Hanisa Elikim B'chad Beisa. The third one, which talks about the greatness of the Jewish people, that Hashem took them out of Mitzrayim, uniquely among all of the nations, B'chad Beisa. That goes in the third bias. Or the Sit Chelyan, and the fourth one, in order to make you higher than all the other nations, B'chad Beisa. That goes in the fourth bias.
Hashem has
four bakim in his tefillin shorosh, and each one of them has one or more psukim in it that describes the greatness of Yisrael. We have Kaddish, v'hayukiv yachas shman, v'hayim shemaya, each one of which talks about the greatness of Hashem and how we have to listen to Hashem. Okay, v'chulu ksivi be'ed roi, and the Gemara finishes off, also all these psukim are also written, so to speak, in Hashem's tefillin shoyad as well. The tefillin shoyad, of course, has only one bias, and all the parashiyas in our tefillin are written on one long strip of parchment. So the same thing, in Hashem's tefillin, they're also all written together, unlike in the shorosh, where they're in separate bias. Okay.
There's four in the rosh.
So there's four in the rosh and one, and then four in the yad, but in the shoyad, they're written in one, all in one compartment. Okay. When a person is accustomed to coming to shul, and then one day he doesn't show up, Hashem asks, what's going on with this person? Why isn't he in shul today? As the pasuk says, Mi vachem yirei Hashem, shemei abakel avdei. Who among you is the one who fears Hashem, meaning who was used to coming to shul and davening over there? Shemei abakel avdei, who listens to the voice of his servant. Marsha says that primarily refers to the chazan. The chazan, so to speak, is the servant of Hashem, because he's standing in front of the tzibur and davening on their behalf. Asher holach chasechim, now this person has gone to a dark place, not for the shul, the ein noigan loy, and there's no brightness for him. So what's going on, Hashem says? Why is he not in the shul today? One meaning of asher holach chasechim also is apparently he left early on a trip while it's still dark, before he even got time for davening. So what's going on? So Hashem asks. And the answer is, im ledvar mitzvah holach, if he went for the purpose of a mitzvah, well then good, noigan loy, then he still deserves to have brightness, because going to do a mitzvah is a very important thing, and that, if necessary, overrides the requirement to daven b'sibur, if there's no other choice. The imlet bar harashut halach, but if he went for some optional thing, for example, for business, ein noigal loy, then there's no brightness for him. He doesn't deserve to have brightness because he's putting his personal affairs ahead of Hashem. Yivtach b'shem Hashem, and the pasuk continues, he should trust in the name of Hashem. What does that mean? My timer. Why are we saying, why are we so hard on such a person? Because mishum dahavle with koyach b'shem Hashem, because the person should have had bitachon, and he didn't. He should realize that after all, parnasa doesn't come from his efforts. Parnasa comes from Hashem's bracha. He just has to make a kedi for it. And if he's going on a business trip, for example, or some other optional thing before he davens, then he shows that he's not really trusting in Hashem. He shows that he's thinking that it's his business acumen and his going as fast as possible to his work or whatever that makes him successful, and that means he's not trusting in Hashem. Okay, When Hashem comes to Shul, and he does not find 10 people in Shul over there, right away Hashem is angry. As the pasuk says, Hashem says, why did I come and there's no one here? I called and there's no answer. So one thing, the ve'ein ish means in particular, even if there's 9 people over there, but ve'ein ish is the one person missing that's going to make a minyan. So therefore, Hashem is upset that it shows that they're not treating davening carefully. They asked the Rashba, the Rashba has in one of his trugas, they asked him, didn't we say on Amud Aleph that when 10 people come, the Shekhinah comes before them? So what do you mean as if we're saying over here that the Shekhinah only comes when the people are assembling? So the Rashba says, first of all, Agad to sometimes contradict each other. But he says also, the word Kodim before over there doesn't necessarily mean actually comes before. He says it can mean comes at the same time. You find indeed. To proceed doesn't necessarily mean that he's there, let's say, 5 minutes before the people. It can mean that he comes. So therefore, when he sees that they're not coming, then okay. So a person who establishes a fixed place for his davening, Hashem, the God of Abraham, who, as we're going to see in a minute, also set a fixed place for his davening, will be at his assistance. What's so great about having mokum l'tfilah? So first of all, some of the mafarshim say that we're talking primarily if a person is davening at home or whatever. If a person is davening in shul, I think Rabbeinu Yonah says there's not much of an issue with it. The whole shul is considered a place of kedusha. But at home, a person should be designating a particular place of kedusha. Other mafarshim say we are talking about in shul as well. And one idea is when a person has a mokum l'tfilah, it shows it's not just like he's just going to daven wherever he happens to be and just get it over with. It shows that he takes davening seriously. And such a person, when he passes away, people will say about him, a onav, a chassid, where is the humble person, where is the chassid, the talmid of Avraham Avinu, that he's a talmid of Avraham Avinu, that he learned to do like Avraham Avinu did, and to daven always in the same place. One idea, Mepharshim say, is that if a person has a fixed place in shul, then it means, in other words, it means he's not getting into fights when somebody else is taking his place or whatever. So therefore, so in that sense, he's a chassid and an onav. Where do we see that Avraham Avinu established himself a fixed place for davening? Just by Yashkin Avraham Avoker, Ala Mokam Asha Omad Shom. The passage says, after Sodom was destroyed, the day before Avraham had davened on behalf of Sodom, 50 tzaddikim, 40, etc., and the next day, he says, he stood in the place, Ala Mokam Asha Omad Shom, in the place where he had stood. So we see that Avraham made a point of being in the same place. We see that Avraham made a point of being in the same place. He got up early in the morning and stood in the same place where he did before.
Right, but what about Sodom?
Because the previous day he had davened in Parashas Vayera that Hashem should spare Sodom and not destroy them. And the next day, after there were no 10 tzaddikim over there, and then Lois and his family were saved, and Sodom was destroyed. The next day, the pasuk says, "Vayashkem Avraham Avoker." Avraham woke up early in the morning, Ela Mokam Asher Amad Sham, and went to the place where he had stood. Now, in Amida Ela Tvila, the word standing over here means davening. Shenema Vayamid Pinchas Vayifalo. As you find that the pasuk says, Pinchas stood up and davened. So we see that Omad, standing, has to do davening, and therefore it means that Abraham made sure to daven in the same place as he had the previous day. Okay. So a person who does that is following in the footsteps of Abraham. Okay. Amr of Chelba, Amr of Huna. Hayotzim of Beis HaKnesses al yafsiya psiya gasa. When a person is leaving shul, he should not take large steps. Because then it shows, and then it's as if he's demonstrating that davening, okay, good, I'm over with it. Let me get it over with, and let me run out of here. Abaya says, and that only applies when you're leaving shul. Avalameyah, but when you're coming in, mitzvah lemirhat. Then it's a mitzvah to run to shul. Shenema, the pasuk says, beautiful adas Hashem. Let us chase, meaning run, in order to know Hashem. Because, so to speak, like someone is chasing you, and you're being chased, so therefore you're running to shul. Mephoshim asks the question, what exactly is Abaya adding what Rabbuna had said when you're leaving shul? So what is Abaya saying only when you're leaving, not when you're coming? It seems like he's saying the same thing. So there's a lot of different explanations. Marsha says that it means if the person is leaving in order to go into the Beis Medrash, then let him go ahead and run. It's one thing if a person is leaving shul in order to go to his business or whatever, then he shouldn't be running. But if he's going to another mitzvah, such as the Beis Medrash, then by all means let him run. Then by all means let him run. There's other explanations. the Pnei Yeshua, I think it is, talks about that usually, in general, the Gemara says a person shouldn't be walking Psia Gasa at all. A person shouldn't be taking extra large steps at all. It damages his eyesight. So what we're saying is when a person is leaving Shul, a person has to be extra careful about that. And in addition, he's showing that that Shul is a burden for him. When he's going to Shul, then nevertheless, even though usually a person shouldn't do Psia Gasa, I am stressing that nevertheless, going to Shul is different. Then Siagasa, I don't know why it is, but that's how it is. The Gemara mentions elsewhere, in Shabbos, I think. So, but when it comes to coming to Shul, then it's an exception to that. Then a person should be. Amr of Zera said, Abzera says in this connection, Meresh, originally, ki have a chazino lehu l'rabbanon, when I saw the other chachamim, because Rati, the Pirka b'shamta, that they were running to the Pirka, which is the shir, the drosha, on Shabbos, when I saw them running on Shabbos, Amina, kamachalion rabbanon Shabbos. I thought, these rabbanon are breaking Shabbos, because it actually says in Shulchan Aruch that you shouldn't be walking on Shabbos the way you walk on weekdays. On weekdays, you walk in a hurry because you're in a hurry to go to work or whatever it is. On Shabbos, you're not working, so you should be walking different, in a more dignified way. But I thought these rabbanon are being machal of Shabbos by running. Given the Shmain Alahad that Rav Tanchum Amar Rav Yishuv ben Levi, once I heard what Rav Tanchum said in the name of Rav Yishuv ben Levi, La'olam Yoritz Adam Lebar Halacha, a person should always run for a matter of Halacha, or Hagoyes HaGrah says that a different gear says that Rishonim has is by mitzvah, for a mitzvah, v'afilu b'Shabbos, and that's true even on Shabbos, shenema achra Hashem yelechu ka'ari yishav, as the Pasuk says, they should go after Hashem, like when a lion is roaring, and Marshal says, in other words, if a lion is roaring at you, you're going to run away, even on Shabbos, because it's korach nefesh. The same way, we see from that, even on Shabbos, you're supposed to be running, when it comes to going after Hashem, to listen to Hashem's words. Therefore, so Rav Zera says, I'm nonami rehitna, so I also started running as well. Because I realized that it's not being Mechal Shabbos when you're doing it for a Dvar Mitzvah. I once saw an explanation about that you see the humility of Rav Zera. All this time, he's always been saying that these people are Mechal Shabbos, and all of a sudden, next Shabbos, people see him running, and he's not worried about the people are going to say, look, Rav Zera now is also what a hypocrite. He's being Mechal Shabbos as well, because he found out the truth, and therefore the truth has to be done regardless. Okay. Amr Rav Zera, speaking of this, that we're saying running to the Pirka, running to the Jerusha, Amr Rav Zera, Agra de Pirka Rahata, the reward that a person gets for going to the Perek, for going to the Pirka, for going to the Jerusha, is the running. Meaning Rashi says most people who go to a drosha like that, they don't understand it, and they're not going to remember it very, they're not going to remember it for very long after. It's going to go kind of in one ear and out the other. So the main schar that a person gets is the fact that he's running to it, not so much for the actual hearing of the words themselves. There's other explanations, including that he means also that the Rav Yaakov Emden says, for example, generally the schar for mitzvah is an olam haba, but the schar for running to the drosha is given an olam haza as well. Amar Abaya says in the same vein, Agrit Kala Duchka, the reward for going to the Kala, which is the Shabbos before Yom Tov, when everybody gathers together to hear the halachas of the upcoming Yom Tov, the main reward that a person gets from that Duchka is for the crowding. Let's say we said on Amar Aleph that you have Mazikim come over there, so the fact that a person is willing to deal with that crowding, to sustain that crowding, and not say, well, it's too crowded, I can't be bothered, that he gets a reward. Amar Abaya, Agra D'Shmaita Svara. Similarly, Rava says the reward that a person gets min Hashemayim for a Shmaita, for a statement of Amiroyim, is Svara, is the analyzing it, that the person works hard to understand the reason behind it. That's the main thing that he gets reward from min Hashemayim. Again, because the Shmaita itself, to go with Rashi is saying before, he might not remember, but the fact that he heard of it, the fact that he worked hard over it, that he deserves reward min Hashemayim. Agra means reward. Rapapa also says the reward that a person gets for the house for going to the house of an oval to be Menachem Oval is shikusa, the being quiet, to know when to be quiet. You actually have a halacha that the oval has to speak up first. So the main reward that a person gets from that is for the shikusa, for knowing when to be quiet. You have to be Menachem Oval, but you have to first start by, you have to know when to be quiet, and you have to start by being quiet and let the oval speak first.
You shouldn't be too
socializing. Basically, yeah. The reward that a person gets for fasting is the tzedakah that they give. You give tzedakah in the evening so that the poor people who are fasting that day should be able to eat. That's the main thing that Hashem rewards the person for the fast is for the tzedakah that he gives. Also, there's the explanation that, a person is fasting, so he didn't spend money on food that day. So he's spending that money on tzedakah, and then Hashem rewards him primarily for that. Amar Rav Sheshet, Agra Despeda Dalui. Rav Sheshet says, when it comes to giving a hesed, a eulogy for a person who passed away, the main reward is for the daluye, for lifting up. Lifting up his voice in such a way that people, that will cause people to cry over the mess. So the main reward, in other words, Rav Sheshet is saying, not so much for what you say, but how you say it. The fact that you evoke the emotions that you evoke in the people over there. There is an explanation in a mimer of the Alter Rebbe that daluye also means to lift up the person spiritually. So the hesed is meant to lift up the person spiritually and bring their neshama to a higher level. We don't do it in Lubavitch nowadays. We don't do a sedim because mainly because of the problem that you may end up exaggerating too much of the person's good qualities, and that would be then they call them on the carpet in front of the base in Shamayla, like, do you really deserve to have such things said about you? Amar Ravashi, Agra Debehi Luli Mili. And one last one, Ravashi says the main reward a person gets for going to a wedding is the words that he says to be Mesameach Chosin V'Kala. A person who davens behind a shul is called a rosha. Now, what do we mean behind? So, Shanema, well, first let's learn the Gemara, and then we'll talk about what we mean by this. Shanema, soviv rishoyim mitalochim. As it says, the rishoyim walk around. So, like, they don't go into the shul, they just stay around, outside. Rashi over here explains like this. The shuls in those days were built in such a way that the opening, the entrance of the shul was to the east, and then the direction that they daven was towards the west, because, for example, they lived in Bavel, and Bavel is the northeast of Israel, so therefore they would be davening westward. So if a person is davening behind the shul, so behind the shul, Rashi learns that it means, in other words, by on the side where the entrance is. Tosfos on Amud Aleph talks about, and Rabbeinu Yonah talks about, that it may mean the other way around. The Chor of Beis HaKnesses actually might mean behind the back, behind the front wall of the shul. So in other words, to use Rashi's example, if the shul is, if the people are davening towards the west, so he's standing outside of the west wall of the shul. One second. So Abaye says this is only if he doesn't turn his face towards the shul. Avo mahader after the beknishta left one bar, but if he turns his face towards the shul, then there's no problem with it. So again, Rashi following his shita explains that he's davening behind the shul, meaning in the direction of the door, and instead of facing towards the shul, where at least then he's facing in the same direction as everybody else is, he's turning in a different direction. So it shows as if, like, so to speak, like he's saying, like the rest of them believe in Hashem, but I don't believe in Hashem, and I'm going to daven in a different direction. So therefore, he's considered a rosha. But if he davens at least in the direct facing the same direction as everybody else, even though he's outside the shul, then there's not such an issue with it. Tosfos learns that what it means is, again, Tosfos learns that it means he's davening behind the front wall of the shul, so he's davening outside the shul, not on the side where the entrance is, like Rashi says, but on the side where the Oren Kodesh is. And what it means is, therefore, at least if he's turning his face to daven towards the shul, so at least, okay, he's recognizing there is a tzibur in there, for whatever reason I can't go in, but at least I'm davening towards the wall of the shul that they're also davening to, so that's fine. But if he turns around with his back towards the shul, even though, yes, he's davening in the same cardinal direction as they are, but it amounts to he's turning his back on the shul, like, I can't be bothered to daven with them.
So what difference does it make whether he's outside the shul davening against the direction of the chief tzibur or inside the shul?
So it is true, actually, that if he's davening inside the shul in a different direction, it's also not so good. But it's not at least as bad, because at least he is davening with the tzibur. But here, he's outside the shul, and he's davening in a different direction, as Rashi says, with his face, the chlau, in a different direction. Or as Tosfos says, yes, he's in the same cardinal direction as them, but if he's back to the shul, then it shows he doesn't even want to be part of the tzibur, and that he doesn't even believe in the same Hashem as they do.
Is it to daven outside the shul, or is it to daven in different directions?
Apparently, what it is.
They all combine, obviously.
No, so the point is, ideally the person should be in shul, but if he has to be outside shul, at least he should be facing the direction that everybody else is. Both of these explanations are brought in Shulchan Aruch, so it depends then. So the person should be at least, if he's behind, if he's in the direction where the door is, opposite the Owen Kodesh, then he should be davening with his face towards the shore, which also results in that his face is in the same direction as everybody else, is in the same cardinal direction as everybody else. And if he happens to be behind the back wall of the shore, then he should be davening also with his face in their direction. So at least he's davening in the same direction as they are.
The reference to the shul is specified. We have to daven towards your shrine.
But that's the point. On the other hand, it's important also to daven in the city. It's also important to show that you're part of the tzibur. It's important to show that you're part of the tzibur. So therefore, if a person is davening outside the shul, then he demonstrates he doesn't want to be part of the tzibur, and that's a pretty serious thing. Right. So in Shulchan Aruch it says Roy Lochosh the Divrei Shneim, that no matter which direction you're davening, you should be facing the shul. Only if it says in Shulchan Aruch, if it's obvious that he's turning his back to the shul. If let's say he's davening in a building next to the shul and he's davening in the proper direction, then it doesn't matter even if it so happens that his back is towards the shul because then okay. So the Gemara tells a case. There was a person who was davening behind a shul, according to either of these definitions. The loy mahaber apil beit mishta. He was not facing towards the shul or in the direction that the tzibur is facing. Cholof Eliyahu. Eliyahu passed by Chazi and he saw him. Idmin leketaya. And Eliyahu appeared to this person like an Arab merchant. Omalei and Eliyahu and the guy, this Arab merchant, says to the guy, Kidu bar kaimas kami morach. Are you standing like this in front of your master? Kedu bar, Rashi explains, kedu means two, and bar means rishus. So you're acting as if there are two rishusim, as if there are two powers in the world. The Goyim bring that actually the word kedu bar, kedu kar, or whatever is actually an Arabic word. Eliyahu appearing like an Arab merchant, naturally he's going to use an Arab word, which means in a chutzpah dika thing. So you're standing in front of your master in a chutzpah way. Shalosh safsur of a kasa. He pulled out a sword and killed him. So it means that Eliyahu and the guy, this Arab merchant, pulled out a sword and killed him. Which there was the idea we learned the other day. Kol overall divrei chachamim chayiv mitzvah. A person who violates divrei chachamim, as in this case, and is chayiv mitzvah. With that said, Marsha has a hard time saying that. He said, how could you say Eliyahu killed this guy for that? So he understands the story that Eliyahu thought that the guy was a taya, that he's an Arab merchant who's standing over there in a chutzpah dika way in front of Hashem, and therefore, yeah. Okay. So one of the Chachamim says to Rabbevai Barabaya, V'amilo Rabbevai L'Rab Nachman Yitzchok, or others say that Rabbevai says to Rab Nachman Yitzchok, My Krum Zulus L'Vnei Adam. We quote at the beginning of the Pasuk, Sovi B'Rishoyim Yitzhabachon, the Rishoyim walk around. So let's talk about the end of the Pasuk. Krum Zulus L'Vnei Adam. The last Pasuk of Kapitel Yubayz and Chilin. What do those words mean? Literally, Krum means like what's uplifted. Zulus means degraded. Livnei Adam to people. So what does that mean? Amalei, so he says, Eilu dvarim sha'omdim berumai sha'olam. This refers to things whose importance is in the height of the world. For example, tefillah, Rashi says, which goes up above to Shemaim. Or vnei Adam mezalzel on the hand, but people treat them casually and disrespectfully. People don't realize how important that is. On the other hand, Rabbi Yechon and Rabbi Elazar have a different explanation of Krum Zulus Levnei Adam. Kivin Shenitztarech Adam Labrius. It means when a person needs to be assisted financially or whatever by other people, Panav Mishtanes Kikrum. His face changes colors like a Krum. Shenem, we'll see in a second what a Krum is. Shenem a Krum Zulus Levnei Adam. Krum, when there's degradation in front of people. So like he's degraded in front of people because he needs their help, and therefore he becomes like a krum. What is a krum? My krum. He also of Dimyam. When Rabbimi came from Eretz Yisrael, he said, Oif echad yesh b'tzakei hayam. There's a bird in the cities near the sea. Ukrum shmo. The name of this bird is krum. V'kivin shachama zerachas. When the sun shines, this bird changes into many different colors. Like it has iridescent feathers or something, and therefore it catches the sun and the sunlight and turns it into many different colors. So the same way, the analogy is the person's face changes colors from embarrassment that he has to ask people for help. Rav Ami and Rav Asi Dami Tavai. Rav Ami and Rav Asi both say Kiyin Nidon B'Shnei Dinim Eishomayim. Such a person who needs assistance from other people is also as if he was being judged with two judgments of fire and water, because he gets embarrassed, his face turns red like fire, and then his face turns pale like water. Shenema here, Kavta Enish L'Roi Shenu, as the Pasuk says, you've made people ride over our heads, and Rashi explains, Roi Shenu also is related to a word Rashia, which means a creditor. So you've made people ride over us as creditors. Bonu va'esh v'amayim, we've come through fire and water. So we see that when a person has creditors that he owes money to, then it's like he's in fire and water.
So
krum zulus, according to the second explanation, means, according to the first explanation, it means the things that are very high up, like tefillah, people treat them casually. The second explanation is when a person feels degraded and like a krum in front of other people when he needs their help. The Amr of Chelbe, Amr of Huna. Another thing that Chelbe says in the name of Huna. La'olam yehei adam zohir b'tfilah ha-mincha. A person should always be careful with the tefillah of mincha, which the point is, obviously, a person needs to be careful with all the tefillahs, but mincha takes place in the middle of the workday, so a person is likely to be more casual with it. In Hayom Yom, it brings that also the word zohir over here means to shine. When a person demonstrates la'olam, that he shows that he's changing the world by yehei adam, by acting as a person, being careful with mincha, that he's less concerned with his business and more concerned with davening, then zohir, that he shines. And how does he accomplish that? The tefillah of mincha. Because we find that Eliyahu Hanavi was answered only at the time of Mincha. As it says, when the Mincha was being offered, then Eliyahu on Harakamel approached and then asked Hashem to help him and send down a fire. So you see that even Eliyahu was only answered at that time. The Pasuk says, he continued, Aneni Hashem Aneni. He says, answer me, Hashem, answer me. So why the double expression? It means, Aneni Shateirat Esh Min Hashemayim. It means he's saying, answer me that a fire should come down from Shemayim. But Aneni, and also answer me in another way, Shalom Yom Ma'isik Shopim. That the people shouldn't say, oh, he did it by magic. Rabbi Yochanan Amar Ach Tfilas Arvis. Rabbi Yochanan says you also have to be equally careful with Tfilas Arvis, with Ma'ariv. Again, even though we learned before and we're going to learn later that maybe Tfilas Arvis, you're sure it's nevertheless don't blow it off. Shenema Tikkun Tfilasi Ktodas B'Fanecha. As the Pasuk says, my Tfilah should be prepared like Ktodas in front of you. Masas Kapai Minchas Arev, the lifting up of my hand at the Mincha of the evening. So in other words, the Tfilah, which is closest to when Ktodas is being brought, Ktodas being one of the last Avodas of the day, and that tefillah is higher. Tefillah is brought bein ha'abayim. It's brought towards the evening. Not after Shkia. No, I've already done it. This is done after Shkia. Okay, so shortly before, whatever. The point is, Ma'ariv is as close as possible to that. Rav Nachman is talking about after tefillah shachar. Rav Nachman says also you have to be careful with shachar. Shenema Hashem boiker tishma koli. As the pasuk says, Hashem, you listen to my voice in the morning. Boiker erech b'chav asape. In the morning, I prepare my tefillah for you, and I wait, and I hope that Hashem will listen to me. So we see that shachris is also an important filler. Okay, we'll stop over here. We'll continue tomorrow.